I'm really, really happy to introduce Professor Sarah Gensberger to you. Sarah is actually my kind of formal sponsor and mentor for my fellowship here at the IAA this year. So thank you so much for your role in helping me spend this wonderful year here. Sarah is a research director at the CNRS and as of just this year, 2023, works at Sciences Po. She works in sociology of memory, works on institutions and documentality, memory and place very directly. Also the history of the Shoah and has done some amazing work on anti-Semitic persecutions in Paris and place, the role of place in the occupation and the residues. She is still currently president, yes, of the International Memory Studies Association, which is a great body. They're having their annual meeting in Newcastle, England, in the northeast of England in early July. If you're interested in memory from any discipline, it's really worth having a look at the MSA, Memory Studies Association. We first communicated, Sarah and I, through a shared interest in the great French sociologist Maurice Halbwachs, whose work will be known to many of you. You know, originally worked with Bergson and in philosophy wrote a book on Leibniz, and then worked with Emile Durkheim and became, you know, the first to actually hold a chair in sociology in France. Wrote great works on memory, and you know, Sarah at one point wrote to me saying, if we did a gig on, you know, would Halbwachs have been a cognitive scientist, would you be interested? Yes, let's keep talking. So today, Sarah's going to take you through a few of her recent interests in memory and place in a talk on the memorialization of terrorism in Paris public space 1974 to 2023. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you so much, John, for this introduction. I'm very happy to be here and to have this opportunity to discuss with you this issue of memory and space from very different perspectives. So I hope my talk will ring some bells to the crowd here, because I'm not a philosopher or cognitivist, but a sociologist and a political scientist. Actually, for the record, I must say that John said Halbwachs would have been a cognitivist. The answer of the question was this one. So today I'm going to speak to you about the memorialization of terrorism in Paris on the long run. But I will start by the year 2015, first because it's a turning point in the localization of this memory in the space of Paris, but also because it was a turning point for myself as a researcher being involved in researching this topic. Since not all of you and most of you are not from Paris, I just remind you a little bit about the events. So on January 7, 2015, two terrorists broke into the Charlie Hebdo satirical newspaper office in Rue Nicolas Appert in the 11th arrondissement. And barely 10 months later, on the night of November 13, three gunmen started by rushing into the concert hall of the Bataclan on Boulevard Voltaire, also in the 11th arrondissement. And after, during this night, they went to cafes and terraces in the nearby 10th arrondissement, and they killed 130 people and left almost 500 wounded. So these events all took place in the same neighborhood, most often labeled at the Quartier de la Place de la République, the Republic District. The localization of the event serves as a starting point of the story I'm going to tell you today. First, because this event took place here that I started researching their memorialization, and from there, the one of terrorism in Paris as a whole. At first, this work, I'm going to come back to that, unfolded in a very personal study, and at the end, it gave birth to a larger research where the memorialization of terrorism in Paris, a public space, turned out to be made as much of remembrance and forgetting. Indeed, the increasing localization of memory artifacts in the city of Paris results today in hiding the fact that terrorism started well before the contemporary era and concerned a large diversity of neighborhoods and political causes. This is the story of remembrance and forgetting that I want to tell you today. So to do so, let's move back to Place de la République at the crossing of the 11th and 10th arrondissement. So at the center of the Republic Plaza, but I guess most of you must have seen some picture in the news, even recently, because it's the starting point for all the demonstration in France. There is a high bronze statue of Marianne, so this is the female symbol of the French Republic. And the surrounding plaza became pedestrian in 2013. So, for example, the affordances of this place was the first reason, very material one, why the memorialization took place here. Usually it should have been on Place de la Bastille, but it took place here because it was available in a way. We can come back to this in the discussion. So after January 7th, so the Charlie Hebdo attack and the one who followed in Montrouge and Hypercacher close to Vincennes, the square was instantly filled with people who came together to mourn the events that just happened on a few blocks away. The base of the statue, as you see in the picture, was immediately transformed into a gigantic grassroots memorial. Just 10 months later, when November 13 occurred, once again, the Place de la République became the epicenter of commemorative events. But this time, a second huge grassroots memorial also started in front of the Bataclan, as well as on the other sides targeting during the night of November 13. So here you see the pedestrian walk in front of the Bataclan. The Bataclan Concert Hall is located halfway between the Place de la République and the Charlie Hebdo offices. I happen to live on the same road with my partner and our two children, who were aged 7 and 4 by the time of the attacks. And I'm a sociologist of memory, as John just recalled. So when November 13 took place, for years I had been developing empirical case studies in relation to the ALVAC theory of memory. So to speak, I was paying attention to the relationship between spatial localization, social space, and remembrance. And so this time, the phenomena that I was accustomed to study in other places and periods just arrived in my everyday life, was now unfolding on my doorstep. This personal and private experience, very basic materiality of the event for me, prompted a new development in my work. For almost a year, I kept records, everyday chronicle, and took notes on this memory process in my district. In doing so, I explored the memorialization in the neighborhood, both from a researcher perspective and from a woman, and maybe more importantly, a mother's view, embedding my fieldwork in my everyday life from a material perspective. So here, for example, I'm doing fieldwork and taking fieldwork pictures, and you see on the left side my son riding for the first time, so he's accidentally appearing in one of my fieldwork pictures. But I can come back to that. It was a trying to distance myself from a trauma perspective, deliberately choosing to include my work in my everyday and ordinary move in the neighborhood. So this first research led to a book, of which an enhanced version was published in English, if some of you want to know more about it, and to a new work, which also gave a birth to a book, but for now only in French. Alone or with colleagues, I have explored the passing from an immediate memorialization to a permanent one through the study of the heritagization of the grassroots memorials first, and the edification of permanent memorials and commemorative plaques on the other. In doing so, I wondered beyond the 2015 sequence what traces have been left by the dozens of terrorist attacks which took place in Paris since 1974, and how the space of memory can work as a framework. So the issue of making permanent the immediate memorialization of the 2015 attacks appeared as soon as January 2015. First, a group of citizens decided on their own to foster and preserve the tributes and objects left at the grassroots memorial on Place de la République. This group called themselves 17 Never Again, in reference to the 17 people killed in the Charlie Hebdo attack sequence. They self-appointed themselves as keepers and guardians of the new grassroots memorials. Each day they will come and sort things between those they want to throw away and those they want to keep, of course, they will throw away the damaged one, but also the one bringing conflicts in their opinion, like the racist messages or the one against the government. And they will stage the remaining ones in the way they like it. So this issue of making memory from ephemeral to permanent immediately brought some conflict. So for example, in this picture, I'm coming back from school with my daughter, and my daughter said, oh, these people are arguing, ma'am, what are they telling to each other? So we went there. The sensitivity to conflict is very different for kids and for adults. And in a way, it was very useful to have her on field work. And so here on the base of the statue, you see a man standing with the hand full of papers, and in front, a woman perched on a bicycle. They are arguing. So the man has just picked up some of the papers and letters left there in tribute by passersby. The woman says, you're not allowed to take this. It's not up to you. He replies, I'm not taking them. I'm going to laminate them to protect them. And she says, yeah, but if people put them there like that, then that's their right, and it's not a problem that they get damaged or destroyed. I like it when the flowers fade. He says, but people didn't think to laminate them. Of course, they were very emotional. We laminate them so that they last. So this man is one of the members of this group of keepers I was telling you about. After November killings took place, this first region of both memorialization and heritageization changed. In Paris, no real destruction occurred. As you know, there was no bombing. It was only people shooting one by one other people. And so it is the importance of the grassroots memorial taking over the public space and literally the pedestrian walks and the streets. We couldn't walk anymore in the neighborhood, which first led the public authorities to get involved in memorialization. It had nothing to do at the beginning with a public memory project. So they asked the city archives to collect some of the tributes, messages, objects left on the sidewalk. So here on the picture, you see an hybrid team of archivists. So they are the one in blue, and city people in charge of the cleaning of the street in green, which is the traditional color of their uniform in Paris. So they will come three times to collect what can be collected and to throw away what was wasted. Of course, the border between the two is what interested me, but I'm not going to address this issue today. So you see here in the picture a result of this process. So this is the original form at the bottom of it, where we couldn't use the pedestrian walk. And this is the state of it after the first passage from the archives. Most of the tributes were moved the other way, close to a public square. I'm going to come back to that. However, this process of archiving has never been extended to the Place de la République. The city of Paris was indeed too afraid of creating conflict with the original keepers, the 17 Never Again group. And this special conflict impacted, of course, on the nature of the collection and on the scope of the memory brought in the archives by this process. Indeed, as it happened, the contents of the messages left at Place de la République were far more political and conflictual than the one left at the Bataclan. First, because, as you know, the Place de la République has for long been the starting point for political demonstration, but also because in 2016, and in addition to hosting the grassroots memorial, the Place de la République also hosted an Occupy movement against work law reforms, already by then, called Nuit Debout, and also the place of a major popular protest against police crimes, violence policière. Today, all these traces of political tensions and controversies have been largely left out of the heritage collection. It is, however, Place de la République that the state and the city of Paris jointly chose to install their first permanent memorial as a way to try to take back control of this plaza as a site of memory. For the first anniversary of the January 2015 attack, they initially wanted to plant one tree 17 trees, sorry, on the plaza as a memorial for the 17 victims of the January attack. But of course, in the meanwhile, the November 13 attack took place, and it was simply impossible to plant almost 150 trees in such a small place in the center of Paris. So they decided to plant one symbolic tree, the one you see in the picture. A plaque bearing the following inscription: in memory of the victim of the terrorist attack in January and November 2015 in Paris, Montrouge and Saint-Denis, the French people pay homage to them here, was also unveiled at the base of what has been called since the Memory Oak. So the first commemorative monument was erected, again, in January 2016, even as people's spontaneous public expression of memory through the grassroots memorial was at its height, only a few dozen meters from the tree in the center of Place de la République. And it is the first time that an event is commemorated by a place less than 3 months after it took place, in the case of November 15. However, and it echoes the question about social uses of the places, regular ethnographic observation have shown that the tree is not visited, and most of those who use the plaza, being tourists or Parisians, do not even know it exists. Nor the tree has given rise to any political or social appropriation. Since its inauguration in 2016, the tree has indeed had competition. First, in July 2016, the French government created, I quote, a national medal for the recognition of victims of terrorism. And very interestingly, so this medal concerns people victims of terrorism since 1974. And the place of Place de la République was picked as a symbol to be used at the center of the medal. Second, the grassroots memorial also became permanent through the heritageization of the tributes by the Paris Archive, which was finally put in a digital project through a website. You can all go there, it's accessible to anyone. Of course, you are fully aware now that these collections are by no means exhaustive. They cover the Bataclan, the Terrasse, some of Charlie Hebdo, because Charlie Hebdo team made a private gift to the archives of the letters they received. And also some of the people, 17 Never Again, finally decided to give some of the tributes they had personally collected to the city archives. So you see that the place of collection is the main label to the indexation of each of the pieces in the collection. But in contrast, some sites and localization are totally absent from this first memorial made of paper. So there is nothing about the killing of a policewoman in Montrouge on January 8th as a consequence of the Charlie Hebdo attack. Nothing is there about the hyper kosher supermarket in the eastern borders of Paris, close to Vincennes and Saint-Mandé. And nothing about the Stade de France, which was also one on the target on November 13. In this respect, the ongoing construction of heritage produces as much forgetting as memory. And this is interesting because the topic and the cases concerned by this mass marginalization in memory are also spatially marginalized and socially marginalized from the perspective of Paris. Montrouge, Saint-Mandé, Vincennes, Saint-Denis are all on its very edge of the city. And similarly, each of these three events I just referred to was conceptualized by the authority as targeting so-called specific groups. The Jews, the police, and in the case of Saint-Denis, a geographic area frequently identified with immigration and minority ethno-religious groups. However, in November 2016, for the first anniversary of the event, the Paris City Council made the decision to have the permanent memorial topography reflect the cartography of the attack. And this time, it includes even the football stadium. The text on the plaque systematically lists the names of the victim, following up the tradition in Paris. Usually, however, in the Parisian commemorative plaque, so I guess if you walked in the city here, it's very impressive the number of plaques you have, but of course none of them refer to traumatic, because we are in a very chic neighborhood, so it's only culture and politics. Even if I can tell you that a lot of dramatic and traumatic things happen in this building, but anyway, it's another topic. But anyway, usually in Paris, all the plaques start by a localization. It's like in this building, in this school, or here. In the present case, things are very different because none of them are fixed on the actual wall of the building the events took place. All of them are several meters away. So here you see it's La Bonne Bière, and it's on the grid of the square in front of the café. On the right side, it's Petit Cambodge and Carillon, as it's on the wall of the hospital, public hospital just in front of the café. On the left, it's a non-profit organization, like almost 50, 60 meters away from the restaurant. And here it's a street lamp in front of the café. Only the Bataclan Concert Hall has a very small plaque, and you can see it on the picture. However, it does not list the names of the victim, but simply refers the viewers to the public square across the road. And for those who want the materiality, you can follow all the small circle. It's written Bataclan November 13 as a path to take you to the way where you have the real commemorative plaques in a garden. In the process of permanently localizing the memory of November 13 in the space of the city, all the sites are torn between mourning and returning to normal activity. The businesses and the building's owners considering the presence of such commemorating artifacts to be bad publicity. But also because terrorism, it's an event with a specular temporality. In a way, it never ends. It's not like a war, which has a point of departure and hopefully an end. Terrorism is a process. And if you've been targeted by terrorism, you can be targeting anywhere because it never ends. And this is this constant tension between a search for visibility and a desire for invisibility, which explains the progressive evolution of these memorials towards a more formal format. So on the left, it's the original inauguration, and on the right, it's 2 years after the victim's family asked for something more formal to protect the place. So as will be presented in another paper tomorrow, since this first round of commemorative plaques, the city of Paris has decided to move beyond this material artifact and to also build a proper monument in the urban space. In picking the place for this official monument, there had also tension between the aim of these monuments. Was it going to celebrate the dead? It was the request of the families of the dead. Or was it going to celebrate the survival? And the survivors were asking for that. In the first case, the first location considered was the Père Lachaise, which is a huge cemetery in the 11th arrondissement. While for the survivors, the main logical place at the beginning was in the close to the Bataclan, at the core of the events themselves. In any case, if in a dystopian future where all archival documents, both paper and digital, were to disappear, and historians will only have sites of memory to write the history of terrorism in Paris, they will tell the story of a phenomenon that appeared almost only in 2015 and not before. However, the reality is quite different. Paris has been hit almost continuously by attacks since the 1970s. In France, the state, as I told you for the medal, established the year of 1974 as a starting point of contemporary terrorism. I'm not discussing that. Of course, it's a political peak, not to include the Algerian war, but it's the way it is. So if we respect that and start with 1974, we can establish that 146 attacks took place in Paris, if we stop counting them in 2020. Of this total, 130 resulted in at least one casualty and 84 in the death of at least one victim. However, as you see on the map, so the map is mapping the monuments or plaques referring to attack. So as you can see, only 15 attacks were mentioned in the Parisian public space by means of a commemorative plaque in 2020. 8 other ones were also installed, but referring to attacks that occurred elsewhere in France or in the world. This can be explained because in Paris, it's also the capital of a very central state and a global metropolis. Anyway, while this topography of commemorative plaques allows to remember a certain attack, it, as you see, above all leads to forget the vast majority of them. The conclusion is here similar to a lot of study about the traces of tragedies elsewhere, each time both sources of memory and producers of oblivion. For example, even the attack of the drugstore Publicis, which is just in front of Les Deux Magots, for those who were in Saint-Germain-des-Prés. So the killing took place in 1974. This is the official event which started the official period and left 2 dead people and 34 injured, but still, even with the picking of the date as the official one, you still have no mention in the public space. So what do have in common the few Parisian commemorative plaques that recall, rarely, attacks that occurred in the capital? So first, before 2020, so the very contemporary period is different, I will come back to that, they only include cases where they had at least 4 people dead. So this is the first common point. But you have one exception. In June 1976, an explosion killed 4 people on Boulevard Sébastopol in the 3rd arrondissement. A bomb targeting a temporary employment agency and was carried out by a revolutionary brigade, so left-wing activists, that intended to denounce labor and security and exploitation. The building's janitor and her daughter, as well as 2 residents, were killed. And so you have no mention of this in the public space. This exception is interesting because it highlights the second common point that unites all the commemorative plaques. They all refer to events either carried out by an Islamist organization or organization linked to the defense of the Palestinian cause. In doing that, they left aside all the left-wing terrorism or extreme right-wing terrorism, which was major things in the 1970s and 1980s in Paris. But finally, it's interesting to know, even if there is a difference between the motivation of the attacks being commemorated and the rest being forgotten, it doesn't have any importance, because in any case, the reason for the attack is never mentioned. It's always the victim of terrorism or an act of terrorism, but without any indication of the reason, actors, cause, motivation of terrorism. Here again, you have an interesting exception. The plaques commemorating the 92 attack on the Hyper Cacher on Avenue Porte de Vincennes, or the one in 82 in Joe Goldenberg restaurant Rue des Rosiers, or the one commemorating the Hyper Cacher Porte de Vincennes, or the one commemorating the attack of the synagogue in 1980, so the one you see on the right. So this type of attacks are labeled as anti-Semitic one. So the category of anti-Semitic terrorism and attack is labeled as such. This is the only one. The 2015 attacks mark a clear acceleration in the average time between the occurrence of the attack and its recall in the public space. Before, the quicker inauguration you could have was after a 3 years lapse. But since then, you have a clear acceleration. Since 2019, a new regime has started. A plaque is unveiled within the year following the attack, and even if it made only 1 victim, creating then both memory and oblivion again. If you go to the Champs-Élysées, and I guess it's a very current place to go for a tourist, you will see that you have a plaque for Xavier Jugelet. So this was a policeman captain killed in 2017. He was stabbed there during a terrorist attack. A year later, the Paris City Council inaugurated a plaque in his memory, saying that it's very important to use this avenue, which is very much visited, as a way to speak of this and promote awareness against terrorism. However, like 10 meters from this plaque, you have the Poinchot Gallery, where in March 1980, there was already an attack, which left 2 dead people and 29 injured. But in this case, you have no mention of the attack at all. Finally, the acceleration, automatization, and material standardization of the memorialization of terrorist attack in the Parisian public space goes hand in hand with the municipality's investment in the matter. Which struck me, actually, when I started researching that, I thought it will be easy because I very much knew what happened in 2015. I was in the process of discussing with the city hall regarding the plagues. And someone asked me for a text about the plague commemorating terrorism in Paris. And I said, yeah, I can do it. It's very easy. And when I started researching it, it turned out to be very difficult because very few archives exist, precisely because before 2015, the city hall was not involved in any of the commemorative plagues. So it really started in 2015. The first 2 plagues to be unveiled in Paris are due to the initiative of Jewish organizations. So the oldest one was placed on the walls of the synagogue in Rue Copernic, where I showed you the plaque earlier. And it used a very traditional Jewish memorial reading in memory of. The same is true of the plaque in Rue des Rosiers, which was installed in 1985 and used in its origin. So you see on the left, it's the original plaque. I'm going to tell you the story. So it's a really easy a traditional expression in Arabic, Hebrew, and French, à la mémoire d'eux. And both of these plagues were private initiatives and contributing to the construction of the category of anti-Semitic attack as a standard vocabulary of the memorial plague. They also place the victims at the edge of the commemoration by giving their names. Another example of before the involvement of the City Hall. In 1989, the City of Paris was still not in the maneuver for the installation of this, which is located at the former Tati store in Rue de Rennes. Now you have a Zara, I think, in this building. So in 1989, so the attack took place in 1986. So in 1989, it is this time in the text of the plaque, the President de la République, the President of the Republic, who is put forward as the principal craftsman of this inauguration made in the name of the nation. But you don't have any mention of the victims. You don't have any other names. So as you see, you only have the name of François Mitterrand on this plaque. Actually, the plaque is the property of the main Association of Victims of Terrorism, which was existing by them. And it was seen for her as a way to promote the cause of the victims, which at this time was very disregarded. There were no at all institution for funding, taking care of them in terms of handicap and so on. And so here the plaque is seen as an instrument to foster the cause of the victims, but not to mourn them. Since then, the figure of the victim has become central in the public narration of event, as well as in the public policies that were supposed to reserve the memory of them. So the installation of a new plaque on Rue des Rosiers in 2015, so it's the actual one you can see on the left if you go, not the previous one I just showed you, illustrates this evolution. Indeed, the plaque in homage to the victim of the attack on the Golden Bear restaurant on Rue des Rosiers is not the one that was originally displayed. The initial plaque was removed in 2007 because of construction work on the building and disappeared. And in 2008, the mayor of Paris expressed his wish to have the plaque again. So it took time. And it took time to first to have the agreement of the owners of the building. And the plaque was finally unveiled in 2011. So this plaque is actually the first one to be put here by the city of Paris before 2015 events. As a way to conclude, I will first stress the fact that if the relation between memory and place always put into tension forgetting and remembrance, it does also do it for visibility and invisibility, the two in my mind being not completely overlapping. In 1996, after a major attack in a commuting train, the public transportation company in Paris, la RATP, was asked by the victims to have their names on a plaque. The RATP first hesitated to agree. They claimed that they feared that major gathering and formation of group of people reading the plaque could harm the traffic. As you must know, and you must have experienced yourself, these fears proved to be unfounded. And today again, very few passengers stop to look at the plaque. If a major study still need to be done on the role that this plaque holds for passerby, I happen to have conducted several types of observation over the year. For example, on the one Rue des Rosiers. First of all, it appears that only a tiny fraction of the passersby stopped to look at it, and among them, very few actually read it. Secondly, and more interestingly, I think, during the informal interviews conducting with nearly 15 local residents, the facts commemorated were rarely those mentions. Most of the residents knew that a terrorist attack happened in the building, but they thought, and they had noticed, as they say, they had noticed the plaque, but most of them said the plaque had something to do with the memory of the Holocaust, because they are in a context, in a place, which is Le Marais, very much labeled as a Jewish district. I may stop here. No, that's fine because I had my 5 minutes.